Why don't we go ahead and get started in the interest of time? It's my pleasure this morning to introduce Bob Halliday, the Chief Financial Officer of Applied Materials. We've got about 20-25 minutes for a fireside chat. We'll have some time to open it up to questions from the audience as well. But Bob, maybe I'll kick things off. I'm sure most people in the room are familiar with the Applied story, but both you and Gary are relatively new as CEO, CFO, I think April and September respectively. So maybe it's, you know, as a way to set the stage, you can talk a little bit about sort of what your core mission is coming into the company, what your key strategic initiatives are, and what you guys are most focused on, as you take over the helm.
Sure. So I'll talk a little bit about our personalities. Gary and I have worked together since 2004 at Varian Semiconductor. It was a lot of fun. Gary, at his heart, is a strategic marketing product person. He has deep customer relationships in Asia. They really trust Gary. He's been going there about 30 years now. And I'm more of the finance and execution guy. So, you know, I did a lot of the internal stuff at Varian manufacturing supply chain along with HR, IT, facilities, and legal and stuff. So what's the point? First thing you do when you come into a new company or situation, you do a market assessment. You know, what are the attractive markets? We came into Applied. We thought that the semi market is pretty attractive the next few years. We thought display was more attractive than people realized. We thought the solar market is just an unattractive market right now because we sell equipment to make solar cells, and there's overcapacity there. So, and then finally, we thought the service industry was way undervalued by the industry in general, including Applied. So what we did was the first thing you do in a company is you optimize the portfolio. So we aggressively moved money out of solar into semi and out of overhead into products, right? That was portfolio optimization, and that's going to be ongoing for the next couple of years, frankly. And I think there's opportunity to continue that path. The second thing is, we try to focus on semi products because if you drive real profitability in our industry, the incremental drop-through on equipment sales is, you know, over 50% incremental operating margins, about 40% on services. So if you can gain market share, it's a lot of economic leverage. So we're focused heavily on the products. So I think in the last, so we're focused on semi, we're focused on market share gains, growing the company, and dropping through a lot more of profit and cash. So we have been successfully, I think, on that path. Opportunistically, Tokyo Electron, which is a very large company in our industry, and Applied talked this year and agreed in September to a merger of the two companies. So, if you look at, there have been mergers in the last few years in this industry, Varian and Applied, Lam, Novellus, and ASML, and Cymer. And there really were no substantive mergers for years. The environment, again, you always go to the environment, has been more conducive to that because we have concentration of very large customers, whether it's TSMC, Intel, Samsung, Toshiba, Hynix, people like that. They want extraordinarily capable suppliers. So an example, if you look at somebody like a major foundry, their process windows are so damn tight. Their requirements for equipment and uniformity across the equipment is really tight, and their production ramps are much steeper and faster than they used to be. So very capable suppliers generally win. So increasing your capability, whether it's technology, service, or production ramps, is a big advantage. And so when we looked at Tokyo Electron and Applied, those capabilities you measure in very strong share in specific products, very large installed base of service tools for an opportunity for us, and three, high customer respect. So if you look at Tokyo Electron, they have all of those things. Customers really love Tokyo Electron as a technology and quality leader, and their share in certain products are very high.
But Bob, when you think about the Tokyo Electron transaction, the cake is truly the fundamental synergies on the product side. I'd argue the icing is some of the financial advantages you'll get. Can you walk a little bit through those advantages and kind of just in general your view of cash flow and uses of cash and return of cash to shareholders?
Yeah, there's a couple of leverage points there. One is generating more income, and the second one, which is really fundamental, is generating better cash flow for investors. I think we have a real opportunity for both because the combined company in a strong wafer fab equipment year like 37, we said we could do $18 billion. But even in a lesser year, we think we can do significantly better operating margins. And that's really my focus for Applied and the combined company to generate significantly improved operating margins, even regardless of the volume, okay, the wafer fab equipment volume. So if you can generate 20-25% operating margins, and that's very viable even in a low year, because you look at 50% drop through, pretty strong IP, strong product positions, good service business. We modeled 25% operating margins. I think that's very doable. Even in an off year, I don't know why we can't get to 20% or so. So then what gets to investors? Cash, right? So if you look at the semi-cap industry, it is an industry that inherently can generate significant cash returns as long as you don't get too much fixed cost, right? Because the industry tends to cycle up and down. So if you look at the history of the industry, you have one boom year. One year you're ascending, it's chaos growing. One year you make a lot of money, and one year you write off everything. And that's a fundamental issue of putting too much fixed cost into the structures and too much time. It takes too long. So if you take fixed cost and time out, you can make 20-25% operating margins pretty much year in and year out. And it's cash margins if you do it right, because we don't have to invest a lot in fixed assets. It's receivables and inventory. We cycle up and down. And so the cash operating margins can be 20-25%. And what this merger unleashed for us was almost a unique opportunity structurally to merge the companies. One is a Japanese operating company, one is an American operating company, and put the parent company structure in Holland, and also put a lot of the manufacturing and intellectual property value added through Singapore, right? Which we've already set up a lot of that. So what you get is a much greater flexibility of moving cash around the company and returning dividends and higher share buybacks to investors. So I think it's almost uniquely positioned as a company that can generate high cash returns to investors. And if we're successful in growing the company, it's a big tech, potentially strong growth, very high cash-generating business.
Bob, when you look at the Silicon Systems Group, you're starting to see some green shoots of outgrowing the industry this year. Can you spend a little bit of time talking about where you think your greatest market share opportunities are within Silicon Systems?
Sure. I think we have market share opportunities in gaining share within a segment in places like etch and inspection. I think we gained share in etch inspection and PVD in 2013. I think some of the momentum continues into 2014. So gaining share within segments is an opportunity. And then some of our segments may outgrow the overall wafer fab equipment. So if you look at PVD, which enables metal gates, that's a very good market right now. Epitaxial growth equipment is a very good market. So the share gains, some of them would be within segments, some of them would be mixed, some of the segments outgrow the overall wafer fab equipment. So if you look at why would we gain share in markets like that, in inspection, Gary used to be the president of KLA a number of years ago, and he hired a number of KLA guys into Varian, and then we've had a few people join us even the last year at Applied. So you've got probably about eight to 10 strong senior guys at Applied who know the inspection business very well. So what Gary and the team figured out is the equipment was pretty good, actually, the Applied inspection equipment, but a lot of the applications where qualifying the equipment hadn't been done. So some of the gains we have this year is putting more applications focused, qualifying the equipment. It isn't new equipment we've introduced, it's applications work, marketing work, because you have to qualify it for multiple layers. And then in etch, we've put a new general manager in there about a year and a half ago. He's done a great job. And what we've done is rapid iterations on chambers and things like that, but not a whole new etch tool. It's rapid execution. So if you look at the share gains and what we've done this year, it's portfolio optimization and sort of brute force execution, picking up the speed, customer responsiveness. The real wind at our back, which is coming from the products, which you see in the R&D line of our P&L this year, that's not going to hit us till probably the end of next year. So what we're doing now is execution. When the products which we're funding now come out, we get some real wind at our back, and that's pretty exciting.
Well, Bob, when you think about the etch market share gains, how important is the NAND transition from 2D to 3D relative to those gains?
Yeah, it's pretty positive for us. We think we're confident we're gaining share in etch for NAND. We did some rapid prototyping of chambers, and we also historically have done somewhat better on memory. And also, if you look at what they're doing, particularly in V-NAND and also in 2D somewhat, very deep high aspect ratio etches. and we do very well at that too.
And then on the logic side, relative to your SAM growth, both in etch and other areas, as EUV gets delayed and there's more multi-patterning, there's clearly sort of an argument to be made that a lot of the stuff that you do needs to be done more at the wafer level. Your SAM growth accelerates. When do you think EUV finally comes into production? And when it does, do we have to start to think about a slowing of your SAM growth as EUV alleviates some of the need for double, triple, quadrupling patterning?
Yeah, I'm not an EUV expert, so I'll just give you my opinion from the back row. If you look at the path, to date, EUV has been a little bit delayed. The power requirements are very high. So you would project that the past is a predict indicator of the future. So my guess is the past will be an indicator of future, and that the schedule will be a little bit slipped, and the power requirements are daunting, right? So if you look at EUV, it's cool technology. It's mostly commercially enabling as much as technology enabling, because you can use immersion tools and do double patterning, quad patterning, and make devices. EUV, if the power gets up and the performance gets up, you don't do as much quad patterning or double patterning, right? Now, first generation EUV is probably still going to be expensive double patterning, right? So when does it commercially work, which is a function of power and throughput, right? My suspicion is the truth somewhere in the middle, and then a couple of things. One, it won't be as commercially viable as soon as people would like, so they'll use some of it and not others. Now, there's several tricks of the trade to make your own devices. One, you can go to more structured layouts, which means it's easier to make the devices. But the other trick that's got real staying power is you change the materials you're using, right? And that's where we play, right? So some of you have heard this lecture series, but you can do 2D planar shrinks, which are getting really challenging, particularly the lithography challenges, or you can go to a third dimension and relieve some of that, or you can change materials. So 2D shrink is really tough with patterning, EUV, stuff like that, because the dimensions are so small. So you free some of that going vertically, like V-NAND really releases that. So instead of 10 nanometer lithography, it's like 50 nanometer lithography. That's a lot easier. The second way in memories, FinFETs are going vertical. That helps you to surface area, contacting, things like that. But what they're also doing in FinFETs more and more is more and more materials modification. They're going to thinner layers, modifying the layers, more steps. That plays to our sweet spot. Now, how many generations can you go taller and thinner on a FinFET? I don't know. It gets pretty fragile. But materials, which is the third trick in the tool bit, big trick, that goes on for a long time, because not only can you change materials you're using, you can alter those materials, whether you thermally treat them, you put multiple layers, you implant them. So what Applied does has got real staying power and cost-effective for keeping the roadmap going. 2D is getting tough. 3D has got a V-NAND is pretty empowering. FinFET's a couple of generations probably. So where we play could really empower the roadmap.
Services. Most people look at services and their eyes glaze over. They fall asleep. I think when tech was a growth industry of 4x global GDP, I think the old saying used to be services is where big companies went to die slowly. At dinner last night, as you talked about the service opportunity, it struck me that it's a really underpenetrated opportunity for you guys and maybe a better growth driver than I would have thought. Can you spend a little bit of time just quantifying the opportunity?
Sure. So the first thing you do when you do a strategic plan, you do an environmental assessment. What's going on in the market? So I already told you, semi market we found more attractive than solar, so we're aggressively disinvesting one and investing another. So then you'd say, what's changed in the environment? So if you compare and contrast sort of the 1990s or late 90s to today, customer concentration, we all know that. And the usual fear investors have is, geez, is there pricing power with the customers? Well, if we provide really disruptive products, we'll provide great value to customers, right? But the other thing with really big customers, which is enabling, is, and I'll get to the service thing, is you can have high market share because it's copy exact, best tool wins, process windows are tight, logic chips are tougher than DRAM chips. So big customers can actually be an opportunity to provide high value in large share numbers. The second thing that's changed a lot is big install base of tools. So if you look at Applied Materials, we have I think, 33,000 tools installed and running. Tokyo Electron's got, you know, 54,000, but bigger tools, sort of 26,000, because they have probers in there too. So if you look at the average tool, semi-cap equipment tool, the footprint for revenues is probably, I don't know, $200,000 a year maybe. Now, the one that's the biggest is probably an etch tool, right? Because etch tools etch. They eat themselves, basically, right? So they use up parts and services. So when you look at, and so if you look at investment opportunities, you look at how much do you get for selling the equipment, but how much do you get in the aftermarket? So these tools last about 10 years. So if you sell your average etch tool or some of the other tools too, you might sell for $3.5 million. And since you're investing in a product cost, the operating margins are okay. But the etch tool might use $350,000 a year of spare parts and services, and the incremental operating margin is pretty damn good on that. Now you say, well, let's risk assess it. You know, the weighted average cost of capital for applied materials is probably 10.5%, 12%. But the equipment's probably a few points higher, and the services is probably 6.5%. We're selling spare parts for our own stuff, right? So when I look at the present value of the company, I got this analysis where I got a stack diagram of every product, service, and overhead we have in the company, and then you assign different discount rates to the stack and opportunity profit to it, and you say, well, the sum of all those pieces is the market cap of the company. If you optimize the stack along growth, profitability, and discount rate, you start to say, I can move the valuation of the company by thinking of three dimensions, growth, profitability, and discount rate, right? So the services is a big opportunity and a risk if you don't fix it, right? Because the customers will second source it locally, and then those suppliers will go up the food chain. So I think it's a really unrealized value. So I think Applied is about 40. It's hard to get hard numbers. I think we're getting about 41% of our opportunity. I think Tokyo Electron is about 18% maybe. So it's a big opportunity.
Bob, you guys are on record talking about WFE growth next year in a range of 10 to 20%. One, is that still kind of how you're viewing the world? And two, 10 to 20 is a relatively large range. So what's the pressure point that gets you to the high end of that number? What are the pressure points that get you to the low end of that number? What's the risk-reward when you look at projects and segment market segmentation, DRAM logic, foundry?
So if you look at it, DRAM this year on those 4 or 5 million, we think it's up, I think, about 10%. I think flash is probably up 30 to 40% next year, and I think it's real. Foundry this year was about 11 billion or 12 or something like that, and it's probably up about 10% this year. I'll come back to foundry. Logic's about, I guess, about 9 billion this year. It's probably flattish, right? So if you go into those and risk assess them, DRAM, I don't know if it's a lot of upside, but I don't know if there's a lot of downside. It's not a big number. Flash, I think, is going to really happen. I think VMANs are very powerful in terms of commercially, technology, and reliability. So I think they're going to be pushed pretty aggressively. And I think there'll be multiple companies that say, hey, we want to play there. I think you're also getting spending on 2D NAND. The good thing for that market is it might enable more sales of NAND devices if they're more reliable and cost-effective. So I think NAND's real, 30% plus, right? Foundry, people push back on foundry and say, gee, it's big. How big is 20 nanometer? How big is, you know, FinFETs? When do they come? I think a few observations of foundry. I think if you map the last few years, you know, the big foundry player has tended to spend pretty strongly even in the second half. So they tend to hit what they say in spending. Two, I think you'll get some little bit more spread out of the spending. If you look at the second-tier foundry guys, it wasn't as big the last couple of years, a year and a half. So I think they'll spend a little more this year. Now, the early part of the year looks strong in foundry. What's the second half of the year and this whole 20 nanometer, how big is it? I don't know. I know that the customer's saying it's big. But to a certain extent, I'm agnostic because we'll sell equipment for 20 nanometer or FinFETs, and a fair amount of the tool set's the same. So the only risk really is, do you have an air bubble in the middle somewhere? And I don't think so, but who the heck knows?
We probably have time for a question or two from the audience, if there is one. Ben in the back.
Hi, Bob. Can you give a little color on the 100K 3D NAND that you guys have talked about at the UBS conference? What gives you confidence that we're actually going to see 100K wafer starts for 3D NAND?
I don't know that we said 100K this year. I think if you'll look at, Michael, what did we say this year, about 30K? I'm looking for Michael. Yeah. So I don't know if it's 100. It's probably somewhat less than that is my guess. If you look at the Xi'an factory, the footprint's 220. I think they'll add a fair amount, and they may pick it up a bit later in the year, but I don't know that it's 100. We're seeing 2D expansion this year, too, places in Japan. A fair amount of that's already in backlog. So I think there's pretty aggressive spending. I think it's about two-thirds 3D, one-third 2D. I don't know if it's 100 in the year, though.
Any other questions?
I guess the reason I was asking is if you look at most people, when they talk about 30, 40K, that gets NAND up only maybe 10, 15% next year. So for NAND to be up 30%, just curious, what are the puts and takes in there?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is I think there's going to be some 2D spending, number one. Number two, I think 30, 40 is 3D, so you got some 2D, too. The third thing is if you look at capital intensity of first generation 3D, it's higher, right? Especially for us, which is it's etch and deposition intensive versus litho.
Perfect. With that, we've ended our time in this session, but I want to thank Bob for his time this morning.
Oh,
really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.